Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 92, Lower Decks, season 2, episode 3, We'll Always Have Tom Paris.
Thanks for saving my ass back there.
You've saved mine plenty of times.
I'm sorry you brought me instead of Rutherford, but, you know, don't feel bad that you don't know much about my life. I keep it vague on purpose.
Why?
Every time I open up, people get promoted and take off. It's better to just keep it surface level and never have friends instead of always losing them.
Well, don't apologize. I was hoping this trip would be a way for us to bond, but it's just been a big mess. And the reason you don't know much about me, that's my fault. I'm always so busy making everyone else happy that I never open up. Now you know more about me than Rutherford does.
And I'm glad I do.
Me too.
What are you gonna tell the doc?
That I was curious and accidentally broke her post. It'll be interesting getting in trouble. I've never done that before.
And I can say two things. You're a really good person.
Aw, thanks. What's the other thing?
Your plan sucks. New plan.
I'm not drinking Samurai Cola, Rockstar Samurai Cola tonight.
Yeah,
so, I'm backing off. I just have Monster Ultra Rosa.
I'm drinking Starbucks Cold Brew, so I might get a little punchy. So
yeah, last week Dan was drinking some limited edition concentrated business, and
just an energy drink I found in 7-Eleven.
It was effective. If you're looking for an energy drink, go for that Samurai juice box. What's it called? Samurai Cola limited edition. Is it Monster?
No, that's Rockstar.
Rockstar.
I have Monster Ultra Rosa right now.
That's tonight, and that's something that's a step back.
Was it Rockstar Samurai Cola?
Yeah,
Rockstar.
Yeah. Rockstar right. brand and the limited edition Samurai Cola. Yeah, and
that won't be an issue this week.
Apparently, we believe it might not be.
So Tom Paris, the main special guest this week, of course, is Robert Duncan McNeil. Reprising his role as Lieutenant Tom, I forget his middle name, Paris.
He's got a lot of names.
There was just an A and B plot in this one. No C plot.
It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the Shaq stuff was pretty funny, all that stuff.
Comedy is very successful when they're able to pull off that thing where, in retrospect, the joke seems so totally obvious, but they manage to pull the wool over your eyes, or at least most of our eyes, long enough that when the punchline hits, it's pretty good. And this episode has two of those types of jokes. And so the first one being Shaq's just reappearing. And we talked about that last week, that we thought he might be coming back because we saw the actor's name in the credits. And so right now he came right back. And obviously the joke is, well, we're seeing things from the Lower Decks perspective, so they just completely don't get an explanation of what's going on. And Marin, that part Marin, of the joke was pretty solid.
Yeah, and Mariner's totally cool with it. She doesn't give a shit.
No. Mariner and Boimler, too. Mm-hmm. Boimler's just like, oh, yeah, whatever. And they list off their number of things. The list was pretty good. They mentioned...
There's a bunch of stuff.
Like, one of them was the future son from an alternate timeline, which Jake Sisko and the Visitor.
Right.
Transporter pattern buffer thing.
There's like Scotty in Relics, in TNG's Relics.
Genesis device.
Yeah, they had two Star Trek 3 references because there was also the restored Katra.
Then there were just the sort of the standard mirror universe switcheroo they mentioned.
Which I guess is mainly Giorgio, Captain Giorgio replaced with Emperor Giorgio, right?
Right.
I'm sure there are a couple other examples, maybe from Deep Space Nine, but that's the sort of permanent one.
Yeah.
Rebuilt by the Borg was another one.
Yeah, and that's there's a Voyager episode, I think, called Mortal Coil, where, if I recall correctly, 7 of 9... uses Borg technology to, I think, resurrect Neelix.
Why would they save Neelix?
I know. It makes sense in the context of the episode, but it's been a long time since I've seen that particular episode.
I like how they sort of combined, they conflated time ribbons with the Nexus.
Yeah, right. Saying like, same thing.
He was either time ribboned or trapped in the Nexus, yeah. So that's a good point. When was the Nexus, of course, was Star Trek Generations. Mm-hmm. What was the time ribbon, or is that actually literally the same thing?
It
was just like the same thing. Yeah, because that's what was going through. I remember them talking about a ribbon.
Through space.
A gibbon with a ribbon.
A gibbon.
I remember. Wasn't that some sort of a Flash animation business?
Yeah, splode, food and splode or something?
Way long
blowed?
Ago.
Was it?
Blowed?
It was like, hello, food, hello, blowed.
Yeah, well, look it up on the internet.
What the hell are you talking about?
It's an old, ancient internet thing.
From, 2005.
Blowed and
blowed. Maybe even before that.
Yeah.
Ancient internet.
I mean, what else is... There's so many things that can happen to somebody when they die. What happened in... I guess that would be a spoiler of Discovery. Someone exploded or something at the end of Discovery. But I guess they were gone for good. They didn't... That was a secret. They didn't, I missed the whole point there. They didn't come back.
So after they... Somebody exploded. After they named all those possibilities, then, like, Rutherford's on his own, and he starts seeing all those different shacks. And there's, like, the Borg shacks and, like, the... The Dyson Sphere shacks and the shacks is Lincoln.
And one of the shacks was mumbling something about, I was like, what was up with DePaul's hair? Yeah, DePaul's hair that one year.
Right. And I looked that up and I couldn't immediately, I didn't look for that long, but I couldn't immediately see anything like about what.
I recall DePaul's hairstyle did change, but I'm not recalling when. If it was like a season three deal or.
It looks
or
like what. It got more like. Bowlish on top, like high the bowl.
Bowlish on top.
The rim of the bowl.
Good evening, nice to meet you. My name is Bowlish on top.
The rim of,
at your service.
The rim of her bowl was pulled up. I think is what it looks like. So it's more.
Wait, do you mean the rim of her bowl during the process of haircutting?
Yeah, that bowl, the one that covers her head while she cuts her hair.
I thought you meant her like metaphysical bowl cut was like raised somehow.
Oh no, but it was raised through the usage of a tool. But not through through metaphysics.
A raising tool.
The usage of a tool.
So yeah, there was that whole joke, and then what was it at the end? He started going on about like what he's talking about the Black Mountain.
Oh yeah.
Which, by the way, Morty in Rick and Morty, there's an episode where Morty comes close to death or dies briefly or something. He's talking about something about seeing some Black Mountain.
Three faceless apparitions of your father. You have to fight three faceless.
Yeah.
Is the Black Mountain a Lovecraft thing? I'm trying to remember.
I don't think so.
It seems
like it's something that's been... You're saying it's been referenced before.
It was referenced once in Rick and Morty, as I recall, and as the internet indicates. But I don't... I want to connect it to something, you know.
Seems like it would be something
that.
Like that.
It seems Lovecrafty or some sort of weird.
I don't. Yeah, like it might be. I don't believe so. It could be somebody else's weirdness.
So what he was saying, he goes, "Death is the first thing that happens," which is like, "Oh no." Then he says, "Then the Black Mountain is a spiritual battleground your soul goes, where you have to fight three faceless apparitions of your father." This next part doesn't make sense. He goes, "The surviving father makes you eat your heart." Which one is supposed to be the surviving father? I thought, you know, I don't understand how that is. Are you only able to kill two of them? Or
maybe when you kill two of them, it activates the third.
It activates the third, the surviving father. But, yeah, that probably makes the most sense.
I just to finish my thought drop from earlier, the Shaq's joke is the one joke that's super like obvious in retrospect, but it was like cool how it like they just immediately get to it right there, right away. And the other one was Dr. Ta'ana only wanting the box.
Yes.
Because she's a cat. She's a cat in a coat.
Yeah. And the crew, there's two, was like two crew members out there all looking around, all weirded like, out. Yeah. And I liked how they sort of portrayed a cat. You know, she's all like snuggly and jumpy at first. And then she comes out and her eyes are all dilated.
She's got the weird eyes.
And then she goes, it's like, ah.
And the thing is, the rules of sitcom comedy require that in the structure of this story that the punchline would be that their worry over the sex statue, the cat sex statue.
You mean the family like sex statue that they pass
the vacation sex
pad, that you pass down to your children? You have a sex statue.
Which, by the way, had a kissy face. Did you notice the statue had like a cat making like a kissy face?
So, I mean, are we to assume her ancestors cared to have sex with the statue because there were scratches on it?
Oh yeah.
So they didn't care about the box so much, but
they might have cared about the box equally as much. Maybe all the claw marks were just from their efforts to remove the statue from the box.
Or there was just so many of them too. It could have been like overrun with them, but then
but that's just, it's a funny joke and it's very well done. And you know there's going to be a joke along those lines, because if you are familiar with the language of sitcom reality, which we all are, you had to have something there that made the whole mission pointless. In other words, the whole protecting the idol or the statue. Yeah, it's like Indiana Jones. Protecting the statue and trying to get it fixed and going through all these dangers and all these other things in order to help it out. Obviously, the statue had to be meaningless in the end. But they still caught me off guard, and I was like, "What is it? What's the joke going to be?"
It really got smashed up. And every time it got more smashed up, like Tendi would be like, no.
Yeah. Like I went, some of the things I laughed out, I LOL'd at. LOL'd.
LOL.
OMG.
When Freeman goes, damage report. And the guy's like, none. That one, I was just watching it alone and I just bust out laughing.
They put their shields up.
And then when also when Mariner said she wasn't into being killed by a bunch of Orions, Tendi was like, they'd kill you on the spot just for being human. And she's like, well, I'm not into that. Yeah, that was funny. But then and I was like, wow, those were some funny parts. But then when that box thing happened, I lost it again because in retrospect, it seems like an obvious joke, like you said, but it still caught me off guard.
It's the obvious, easy joke. But it's
so funny.
It was also greatly aided by how well it was presented and performed, too. Mm-hmm. Just the animation of her, the delight she had at seeing the box and getting in and crouching down and doing that cat, weird little chittering sounds they make when they're all happy.
She should have planned ahead better. She knew her heat was coming. She should have sent him out, earlier.
Well, as we've discussed, she's a competent doctor, but she's not the elite.
No, she's not. And another one thing that proves that is, so she got Tendi because she wanted to keep it discreet. She's like, keep this discreet. I don't want to even know about it. She's like, oh, by the way, though, you can invite whoever you want along. You know, you'd think she would try to have that under control. So, yeah. And then Mariner gets involved and she should have just left it to Tendi or picked her second person for her. I don't know. But that was a funny direction that the joke went in for, because it ended up happy and good. There was another part with that whole plate, the deal with the plate.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
right. So the whole episode has the audience nervous about that plate.
He's got a bunch of Voyager plates.
Yeah, he got a bunch of
Voyager. You're right. It's like there's some diehardish type elements, but along with the don't damage the relic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I like that he went through the whole episode and he still got to keep it at the end. Because if this was like Married with Children or something, the plate would have broken at the very end on something stupid. And that's funny for but it's also, it always made me a little sad. Yes. And I was always a little bummed out. Right. So I like when they don't just like throw some badness at you for no reason. Married with Children was different.
It's a different kind of, that's the message of the show.
Bob's Burgers does that a little bit too. Not as aggressively, as cruelly as Married with Children.
That's the show's about how the world's always pooping on Al. But that's not, Lower Decks is Boimler. It works out for Boimler.
Boimler's just pooping on himself. Yeah. Boimler's mostly pooping on himself.
Some shit happens to him and he's okay afterwards.
I think Bob's Burgers, they have such a sort of like this strong sense of family by the end of it.
They're happier. The point of the Bob's Burgers and episodes the Bundys, is even with the challenges, they're still happy.
Yeah, and the Bundys every once in a while will express their happiness at being a family, but not all that often. So, the Bundys from Married with Children. Boy, that
which was a television program from the 1980s.
Yeah,
into the 90s.
But that was a durable plate.
Durable.
That was a durable plate.
He smashed it into the thing.
Until you just mentioned it.
It's made out of space metal.
I did not make the connection between the fact that both the A and B story were about protecting something to one degree or another. Because Boimler's, his goal and his task is different. He wants to get the plate signed. But part and parcel of getting the plate signed is that the plate has to make it to Tom Paris safely.
And so, and that's kind
just of... just like the sex scratching post.
And that's kind of what I was stumbling through before trying to say how... because I didn't put that together explicitly about how it's protecting something.
Kayshawn, his eyes open.
But in one instance, the thing breaks and it's good. The other thing, the thing doesn't break and it's good. So it's like things break and don't unbreak in a very good way.
All right, now apply that to something personal that happened in your life. that lesson.
Well, I broke my finger and it hurt and that was bad. And then
you didn't break the other fingers.
I didn't break the other finger. In fact, I crushed a can and saved space on recycling. So that's good.
I heard you're not supposed to do that. I heard it aggravates the machines or something.
Oh, the crushing of the cans?
I could be wrong about that, but I heard that.
It's like recycling. You have to do it just so.
Yeah, you can't put pizza boxes in there.
You got to throw it all out.
You're not supposed to put in the grocery plastic grocery bags. You're not supposed to recycle those.
You're not supposed to put just like regular garbage in there. It's like they get really upset when you just toss a whole rotting chicken in there.
Why are we talking about recycling? Oh, yeah, because you were asking about something broke and it was good and something didn't break and it was good.
That's what you were talking about.
That's what I was talking about.
Actually the one talking about.
Yeah, but it was to your point of what I was trying to say about how this episode is about protecting something, and I'd never put that together.
And on the Mariner and Hendy side, it's about not breaking their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I said it in a cheesy voice, but it's a sincere tale. It's a fairly standard, let's pair up two people and challenge their relationship by close proximity deal.
Because they don't usually pair up. It's usually the other two.
And they even make that overt joke in this episode. Yeah, it's like, right. You've never hung out together.
Usually with Boimler.
Last week, we were also talking about that I brought up the subject of...
That was episode 91 of the podcast.
Yes, indeed. We're talking about will they, won't they? And we're comparing...
Will they or won't they?
Rutherford and Tendy with Mariner and Boimler. And they directly referenced this, actually. And
Mike McMahon is... They heard you talking on the podcast.
So
Mike McMahon.
Oh yeah,
and
they came up with that last minute.
Rewriting the show.
He rewrote that scene. It was hard because he had to make it work with what they were doing before. Yeah. You know, but yeah. So Mariner was like was grossed out by the idea of dating Boimler. But then when Mariner goes, are you and Rutherford dating? She goes, not really.
Yeah.
So
it's moving along.
Moving along home.
That particular relationship will be moving right along home. Third shap, I think it is similar to third base.
That's a pretty big shap.
Are there four shaps? I thought there was like eight shaps or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's a lot of bases, too.
Eight shaps.
Why did Mariner's green wear off? Was it because she got nervous or something?
It was false green.
It was false green.
When Tendy injects her, she states outright, she said, this will wear off.
Yeah, but they should have, you know, once again, just how Dr. Cute Kitty Cat, you know, should have planned her heat better, they should have planned... got in and out more quickly, you know?
Tendy didn't probably know. Maybe it's variable. The old school Star Trek thing would have been to say, this will last precisely 36 minutes.
Yeah.
But the new school way is to leave it open, and that provides more freedom for tension and drama.
Mm-hmm. I liked how that one guy was sawing at the elevator cables with an axe.
Yeah.
There was one guy who was chopping at it, and the other guy was sawing at it. If you notice, the blade for the one who was sawing was actually like saw blades on it, whereas the other one was a choppy one. So he had a saw axe. Yeah. Have you ever heard of such a thing? An axe with serrated edges?
Only in my wildest dreams.
Yeah, exactly. You said it, brother.
So the actual plot of the Tendy Mariner friendship testing situation is straightforward, but it is again presented well, it is acted well, the design elements that they use. I love that they get to go to all these different places,
make slushies out of everything.
Oh yeah,
Quaylar 2 had a Quarks
as
well.
Quarks
franchise. Do you know what else it had a Vic Fontaine's. It had
Vic Fontaine's.
Quaylar 2, first of all, that planet, there in Unification 2, the second episode of the Unification trilogy now.
Right.
Now,
you just listen here.
Now, you
sound like Ross Perot.
You just listen here.
You just listen right here.
I'm
okay?
All ears.
I'm going to go down to engineering if you're not careful.
Oh, shit, he's pulling out the Trip Tucker. That means he's serious, folks.
What were we talking about?
Listen up.
You were talking about something. You kept pointing at me. You were pointing at me.
Yeah,
you were threateningly pointing at me.
Oh, we're talking about the planets, right.
Yeah,
so, Quaylar 2.
Unification.
So what was the planet that Quarks was on within Picard?
The one with like Stardust.
It was like Free,
City,
yeah, Stardust,
or
something.
Freeville or free soccer.
Stardust City Rag.
Stardust City Rag was the fifth episode of Picard's first season. I can't remember.
It's a
what
wild
it was.
Episode.
But yeah, so Quarks, we know at least two franchises. I expect we're going to see
Cloud.
Free Cloud. That's right.
Yeah.
We'll see Quarks franchises. I expect repeatedly, but mm-hmm. there was also Vic Fontaine's. There was the sign for the Zebulon sisters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
Which was from, I forget, what was that, Veritas or something? One of those Lower Decks episodes.
Zebulon, isn't
it's
that...
the one with Fletcher?
Oh yeah, the one where he gets
the choo choo dance.
Isn't Zebulon one of like the 12 brothers of Joseph with the amazing Technicolor dream coat?
Probably. It's
Zebulon.
A, it's a It's one of them.
It's like
Old Testament
Asher,
names.
Asher and Dan, sure. And
Terminal
Zebulon.
Provocations. It's Terminal Provocations is the episode that the Zebulon sisters are mentioned. Quailar 2.
Quailar 2.
Quailar 2.
Quailar 2.
Quailar 2.
We are going to have fun on you.
All right.
Wow.
Sorry.
Are you through?
Yes.
All right.
Sorry.
Quailar 2.
He wants to make it into a musical.
Quailar 2. I mean, I'm down for that.
Mm-hmm.
But another time. Mm-hmm. Quailar 2. In Unification 2, that's where Riker and Worf go down. They're doing some investigating. And they meet, I think her name is Amari, the four-armed piano player who plays the Klingon opera and sings the Klingon opera for Worf. And there's you can see there's a sign that has like, you just see four arms playing piano going into that Quailar 2 city. I also liked when they were coming down in the shuttle, the city looked really cool. It looked a lot cooler than usual Star Trek cities because normally you just see the planet and maybe in some of the newer ones, maybe you'll see some lights, but we haven't had a lot of experience with this. But you see this beautiful coastal city on not quite a peninsula, but like a little outcropping into the ocean. It's all like concentrated light and it looks like a super fun place to go hang out.
Yeah. You're talking about how they make slushies. Make a lot of slushies.
Everything you can.
It's
make
like Key West.
Yeah, it's basically like Key West.
Yeah,
Key West, Florida.
And that's where she found out about. Oh, she saw was that band Gik'tal, and we find out she's into Klingon acid punk.
Isn't Gik'tal the name of? Is that the name of the song or the band? I thought it was the song.
I think the song is called Greythor Paradise. It sounded like they said Greythor, but I think it's Greythor Paradise.
So okay, no, yeah, you know, you're probably right.
The chorus of disgraced Klingons.
Yeah, even Klingon art's brutal, man. like real life brutal. You know,
the music sounded pretty rad.
Yeah, it sounded like
cool, yeah.
It sounded like Death Clock, which was the band in Metalocalypse,
right?
And that's death metal.
Right.
So especially the last song about the Klingon eating his own hand that they left the episode with, that was
just death metal.
That was just like death metal and
punk or
right and
whatever acid punk
is. Acid rock is the definition on Google says a type of rock music mainly of the late 1960s.
Yeah, it's like
associated
psychedelic rock.
With or inspired by the use of hallucinogenic drugs. So I mean, acid sounds brutal, but it's really just referring to LSD. So I don't think they meant Klingon LSD-inspired punk. I would think the LSD lifestyle, that would be a little too hip for Klingons, I think. You know, that kind of...
Yeah, I'm saying Klingon LSD might be a different animal.
Oh, a I think Klingon they're doing LSD.
Literally, you might have to squeeze it out of an animal.
So maybe Klingon acid punk is some of their version of LSD.
They're doing some kind of shrooms
LSD.
And having some kind of mystical journey, though. Those
yeah.
Klingons can do that, though.
Okay. Yeah, I bet they're... Yeah,
they would do that.
They dig on...
They might start stabbing each other.
They're like Vulcans. They want to wander around in the wilderness and fast and... Get all strong and have visions.
Visions of
yeah, they
of
dig that. They got them time
Kalish.
Crystals.
Yeah, go find that temple and get some time crystals.
Yeah, that's where it's at.
Yeah,
you can fuck everybody's shit up with those time crystals.
So the Cation libido post. Like I know I already said this, but it's weird that it was sex toys passed down through generations.
Is it any weirder than a candle that your grandmother had sex with that you then have sex with? A la Dr. Crusher in Sub Rosa. You know, the candle that you light the candle and a Scottish guy comes out and you have sex with the Scottish guy.
I mean, that is pretty weird.
I think he was Scottish. I could
but
be
that seemed,
maybe I'm just kind of projecting my own candle fantasies
onto
that.
Scottish.
That seemed more incidental, though. Like, it wasn't premeditated, you know? It just kind of happened.
Well, I think the ghost was manipulating somebody.
You had some sex and you're ashamed of it or whatever, you know, because it was just at the moment.
A sex camp. But you shouldn't be. Beverly Crusher's not going to be sex shamed, I don't think.
Well,
in the 24th
century. No, I'm not saying you should be shamed for having sex. I'm saying sometimes a person might feel shame in themselves if they did something with somebody that they never intended to do and in a moment of passion.
You mean
passion.
Have sex with your grandmother's sex candle?
Yeah, but I'm just saying that if that was pre-met. Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What you're saying.
But in this case, the implication. Is that there's no subterfuge or comical French farce style confusion, no Midsummer Night's Dream style disguises and whatnot tricking people. It is just that's the post that we rub ourselves on when we get horny
and scratch them.
So that is materially different. I will grant you that.
Well, it's materially different, but it's also more premeditated because they have because they have a tradition that they do this.
They make
year
a big
year.
Deal about it.
I mean, you can call me crazy if you want to. I won't get mad or nothing.
I wouldn't. I opt not to.
I opt not to.
I opt not to.
Yeah. Jeremy the Cation libido post.
Jeremy, like Jeremy, it made me think of Jeremy Lucas, Dr. Phlox's friend from Dear Doctor. Because we had that conversation Jeremy about Lucas, like right. Jeremy Lucas is like the most banal human name ever. And now it's coming up again. Jeremy.
Yeah. Mariner. I didn't know. You found out a little bit about her, right? I didn't know did they mention all this stuff that she was on DS9, then Keto, and then Cerritos was the fifth ship, so there was two somethings in between.
We knew about the Keto. We'd seen her on DS9 before, but yeah. This is a firmer confirmation that she was in fact posted to Deep Space Nine, and that the prior flashback memory we saw in season one was not her visiting Deep Space Nine. She was posted there, and specifically she was posted there during the time that Worf was there. So towards the end of the Dominion War, and I think the Dominion War ended around, was it 33? Was it 23? What was it? Discovery's getting me. That's
almost,
what I was.
Yeah, thinking. I almost fooled me too.
But 2375 was when the Dominion War ended.
It's either 80 or 81. I'm not sure.
Right now it's 81. I think is the general consensus.
Okay.
Because it started in 2380. Yeah. But we do get clues. We do get clues and some more confirmation about the Deep Space Nine stuff. And it opens up the possibility to see Garak and some of the other crazy, wacky characters from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, because Tom Paris, they already got him. Riker.
I want to see Garak, so I hope they have it in play. If they don't already have it planned, I hope they're working towards that.
That'd because be awesome.
Andrew Robinson being on the show would be great. You could pair Garak with all of these characters and have some sort of hilarious outcome as a result of it, particularly Mariner.
So I don't remember us hearing Boimler's name. I heard when he said Bradward, I was like, Bradward?
Yes.
I don't remember them Bradward. Saying Bradward before. They've said that.
I think even in the first...
When he has the girlfriend says Bradward.
Bradward.
I think she's the first one to say the name.
It might be. We knew he was Brad Boimler, but maybe...
Yeah, I knew he was Brad Boimler. I just didn't remember when the Bradward... My memory is terrible, though.
Bradward's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it is. Devana, we knew that. Beckett, we knew that.
Devana Tenney. There is a slight canonical disruption, which is great.
It just means
that Lower Decks is real proper Star Trek
canonical,
and this is a debatable one too. But in the first season episode where Mariner makes the movie version, right? You know, she makes the movie version of the show, basically, where they're playing around in there.
Oh, right, yeah.
She has credits,
right,
and in the credits, it says Devana Tendi as such and such.
Oh, right, yeah.
So one presumes she knew that was her name. Now, one could also argue that she simply used tag fields, like if you're doing like a mail merge or something.
Yeah.
She just sort of put those things and had the computer fill in the names.
And then she didn't pay attention to it.
So that can be your headcanon if you want to understand why Mariner did not know Tendi's first name in this episode, but did know it. Or appeared to know it in that previous episode.
Hmm. That is an inconsistency.
She could just be really forgetful because she's always doing stuff up to no good.
I was because they were earning latinum and they needed 50 strips of latinum, and because they were in Bonestell.
Yes, they flew from Quaelor 2.
Yeah, to Bonestell.
Well, at Quaelor 2, I did want to mention that cool cat guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was cool. Just sort of like his jive cat guy.
Yeah.
He got all cool when she was into the Klingon music. But what I noticed on like my second or third watch was as Tendi and Mariner are talking, and at this stage they're starting to sort of argue with each other a little. They're getting a little bit just the beginnings of like, it was weird that you didn't know that about me thing. You see the guy go in the back room and there's a window through the door and he's like he's like climbing up this ladder and stuff. And it's meaningless. There's not even a joke in it, but it's just the detail they put into the background. A similar thing is a little bit later before they leave Quaelor 2. They're really arguing at this point, and you can see out the back of the shuttle, and there's like all this awesome stuff like going by the window.
Oh,
basically.
Now I want to watch it again.
And the colors are all clever, so I just wanted to mention that. But then they go to
check that out again.
The Bonestell.
Bonestell?
Bonestell.
Bonesaw. They go to Bonesaw. But so it costs 50 strips of latinum, and that got me looking up latinum, and it's not that complicated because I was curious the denominations.
Yeah. Strips, slips. And blips.
Pips.
It's the order from least to most. Slip.
The bleeps, the sweeps, and the creeps.
The what?
Sometimes you can get snips. Sometimes you can get them snips of latinum.
Sometimes you get like shavings of latinum and put them in your cinnamon.
Crispy snips.
Your cinnamon schnapps.
Yeah.
Your schlager schnapps.
Latinum Schlager.
So I was saying, Latinum Schlager. Yeah. It goes from least to most. It goes Slip, the Strip, the Bar, and the Brick.
Ooh.
Oh, a brick of Latinum.
I wonder, now it makes me want to look back in DS9 and see which
they
episodes.
They use those terms there. Well,
I just, makes me want to know which episodes Quark was ever had an opportunity to get bricks of Latinum. Because I had to have happened, you know, time or three.
There might have been. There was that one time where he got scammed, where it turned out that somebody had taken all the Latinum out. And it was just useless gold bricks left over. But I don't know if those were bars or bricks, but I think those were bricks because they were big.
Big bricks. Big useless gold bars. Big old bricks.
I think the guy... Now, what's your opinion on this?
I think it's great.
No. I haven't revealed the this yet.
Wait for it, man.
When they go to Bonerland... And they're trying to get that, you know, they're trying to raise the money to pay the repair guy. Do you think the repair guy is a Kelpian? He kind of seems like he's got like a Kelpian vibe to him. It just wasn't super clear from the way it was animated.
Now I want to watch again for that too, for the background animations and to pay the.
I think the repair guy might have been a Kelpian because we know Kelpians are handy with. They're not just tasty. They're also handy with tools. Because Saru is really good at that. Mm-hmm. We saw that in the short trek that was about him.
We know there's Nausicaans.
Yes, the Nausicaans are cool. They're being all typical Nausicaan style.
Yeah.
Playing the typical Nausicaan pool or whatever that... Domjot, right?
Domjot, because the guy was talking about that he just had the table rejotted.
Yeah.
And so...
I didn't catch that, but yeah, now I get it.
Yeah, and it's Domjot. And then I was looking up...
That was a Tellarite bar owner, I guess, right?
He was a Tellarite, totally.
Then there was like Dabo. Dabo is like the roulette one.
Yes. And you have the Dabo girl.
Yeah. So there's
it's misogynistic. It's a misogynistic game.
Seems like.
Right. So, and then the Dabo, there's some kind of meaning behind the word. It's talking about like some kind. Oh, it says it means, Dabo means, according to Memory Alpha, Dabo means I shall give in Latin. I almost said Latinum. I shall give in Latin. And it means gold in Aramaic.
Well, there you go.
That's fucking
it's
wild.
It's a double entendre.
Those languages aren't clever. Really related. So.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a pun. It's like a pun, right?
You play Domjot, human? This is, of course, a reference to Tapestry, where Picard and buddies get involved in some violence with some Nausicaans related to a nasty game of Domjot, and in which cheating is both alleged and committed.
And Picard's a badass and beats the shit out of the Nausicaan, and everyone's like, Picard, you're amazing. He's like, no, that was terrible of me. Yeah. And it's kind of like...
That was so terrible.
That was like when
I'm going to have a teal uniform
when
now.
Hank Hill, when Bobby sees a video of Hank Hill in high school football, and he's like doing a flip in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby's like, that was awesome. He's like, no, it was shameful.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, he was like talking about how the Orions was going to use their pheromones to cheat them.
Yeah.
And then
confirming the much reviled pheromone conceit that was introduced in that Enterprise episode Bound, which we discussed that one. I think episode 61 of the podcast, we discussed Bound.
So Mariner, you know, goes like, she wants her to juice it a bit, which is kind of gross, but that's just an imagery. Yeah. But that's not confirmed that it's there. But then later in the episode, Mariner's, when she's talking like a pirate to try to get sneak by, and he's like, what's your problem? She's like, I'm allergic to pheromones. He's like, oh yeah, there's a lot of pheromones around here right now. So that one right there confirms. But
it is confirmed in the previous conversation, because when Mariner says that, can you juice it a bit? Tendi says, no, I'm not even that type of Orion.
Right.
That type of Orion.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's gross. Yeah. And first of all, this is yet another example of Mariner treating Tendi somewhat insensitively about her Orion heritage, right? Mm-hmm. So she hasn't fully learned her lesson from this first season episode. And again, the same one with the movie stuff where she really stereotypes Tendi. It's not quite as strong here, but it's the same sort of mechanisms at play.
Tendi's all like, everybody thinks we're thieves and pirates. And then she's like, I have a cousin. He lives in the thieves' den in the pirate outpost.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good joke.
Yeah.
But we see Tendi, another example of Tendi having conflict with her culture, including having to do the things she has to do, kicking ass and stuff. But with the pheromone thing, what I liked about this was, on the one hand, I was almost like a little annoyed that they confirmed the Enterprise thing, because you could have just said, all right, Enterprise, we'll just ignore that particular thing, just like we like to ignore TNG's Code of Honor. And there's always a few episodes you're just like, we're just going to pretend that whole thing didn't happen. Yeah. On the other hand, by confirming it and addressing it, but then adding to that information, I think they ended up doing a service to the Enterprise episode, because Tendi's statement saying, like, I'm not even that type of Orion.
Oh, right.
We don't have any details around that, but it does lay the groundwork for, okay, that's not true of everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not some universal skill. It's kind of like how the Trill, not all of them are joined. In fact, only a small proportion of them are joined. But I also do like that they've continued this tradition that was started in Bound, in the Enterprise episode, which demonstrated that Orion women in their culture are the ones who are in charge. And Discovery already had implicitly continued this tradition because of events that happened with the Orions in Discovery. There's female leadership involved there. And in the short Trek, The Escape Artist, which we discussed a few weeks back, it's a similar deal. We have a brief scene with the Orions, and clearly the woman is in charge. So they've already continued this idea that that's how Orion society is structured, or at least portions of it. And then they've also confirmed the at least a part of that whole pheromone deal.
Yeah, speaking of what you were saying about the women being sort of, you know, dominant. So there was that guy Donnie who was, and he calls her cousin. But then, like, when she gets all tough on him, he starts kissing her feet and calling her Mistress of Winter Constellations.
Yeah. Which is, by the way, Orion is sort of a winter constellation. It's highest in the sky in the Western Hemisphere.
So do you think he was really her cousin?
Northern Hemisphere.
Do you think it was really her cousin? Because, like, it was a little weird, you know?
I do think it was her cousin, and I think it was weird.
Kissing her feet and calling her a mistress, like, you know, it's just kind of weird.
Different cultures.
Yeah, different cultures.
Different strokes for different cultures.
Different.
That's the old saying.
She wasn't cool with it, though, so she agrees with you that was a little too much.
It's gross, the idea of the pheromones being really bad this time of year. Everything about... I know it's probably not
like
allergies.
It's like pollen.
You
don't have allergies.
Then when the Nausicaan said he thought she'd use her pheromones to cheat him, at first I thought he said fireballs. He says she'd use her fireballs to cheat him.
That'd be cool if she had fireballs.
At first, I thought that...
How long did it take before you realized the error in thinking?
I think I rewinded it a couple of times and I kept hearing fireballs and I was like, that's not right.
And by fireballs, did you assume balls made out of flames?
Yeah,
the fireball candy that's like a spicy cinnamon candy?
Oh, no, you're silly.
Did you think she was going to lick some fireballs?
Those are good.
No, I thought she was talking
about... Roll them on the Domjot table?
I thought she was going to take a wizard fireball.
If the Nausicaans try to eat the fireballs and they're like, oh, these are too hot.
These are too hot.
And they'll get distracted and
too much cinnamon humor.
Kick them in the balls.
This burrito is good, but it's just too big.
I'm just going to throw it out the window.
Yeah.
But the whole business with the Orion pirate colony was a fun, roaring adventure. All these little set pieces they have are cute because they're different environments. The music is slightly different for each one, right? The music in this episode is great, especially all the little Voyager stings. They pop in here and there. Like,
oh, Boimler's singing them.
At one point, he's just humming.
Humming the boiler.
That's the second time, because he was humming the TNG theme once, as I recall.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, in one of the early episodes.
Yeah, and that was the first time anybody had done, like, a reference to, like, an in-universe reference to the music.
Diegetic sound.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Mm-hmm. So everything, I thought it was, whoa. What the fuck just happened over there? Something went flying.
I did something careless.
Is anything broken or messed up?
No, it's all good. It just made, you know.
Okay. Do you need to deal with this now?
No.
Okay.
I'm going to continue with the podcast. Okay. Like it never happened.
Like never even
It was just
happened.
The lid off of
nothing
something.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Nothing happened at all.
But you were
nothing
saying.
Nothing at all.
You were saying that.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah. The Yosemite. The Yosemite.
Yosemite.
The shuttle. I thought it was hilarious when she rammed into the shield, and then she goes and it just goes dink and just kind of bounces off the shield like it was nothing.
Which someone on the internet pointed out was very similar to that fellow Roga Dinar, which was in that TNG episode, The Hunted. He's that guy who outsmarted Picard. But in the first season, again, I don't recall exactly which episode, but there's a point where they're talking about who the coolest person.
And
he was saying like Rogan Dinar, and Mariner's like, that's some guy nobody knows. Yeah. You know, Khan is way cooler. He was a space.
Right, I remember that.
Boimler is talking about it. He outsmarted Picard, and he has got great hair. But he does something similar where the Enterprise is trying to tractor beam him, and he just rams into the Enterprise's shields and sort of bounces off of them, and it helps him escape.
A B got in the shuttle.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Put the B in the brig. It's the B's fault.
Yeah. She's always going back to the brig too.
And she has her specific cell that always has that little picture where she's drawn a fort and it says like Fort Mariner or something along those lines. It's a little castle she's drawn on the wall.
It's awesome. I like when Boimler was getting gassed up and he was he's all like, you know, at some point he turned into like some craziness face.
Yes.
I didn't quite get that transition. I think it just kind of happened, but I like he gets all, he like shoehorns in some like weird philosophy. He's like, I'm trapped because of a computer glitch, or perhaps it is I who is the glitch. This is like,
well, because he is a transporter clone.
Some fumes.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to.
And that's funny because you can tell it's a throwaway line with a purpose. Like they're not going to really address it. They'll just throw it out there and let you kind of work with that. And
what did you think about this whole business with Tom Paris? Because we see Tom Paris, but he's not really in the episode that much. It's more of it's an end goal. Robert Duncan McNeil. Tom Paris. He does a great job, of course, both as person and plate. reprising his role as Tom Paris. I liked seeing him kick the shit out of Boimler.
Yeah.
Really, he was like, Kazon.
I like it when Boimler, like, he pops down and he's like, Tom Paris.
I really respect you.
Yeah. So at the end when Boimler goes to Mariner, he goes, but this black guy he gave me is way cooler than a signed plate. And Mariner goes, true. There's like only a couple of people in the quadrant who can say they got beat up by Tom Paris. She like kind of joned on both of them. Kind of awesome.
Who else did he beat up?
Yeah, he might have beaten up Harry Kim.
Why would he beat up Harry Kim?
Like, you know, they get an argument an over something.
Not Harry Kim's an asshole. Yeah. Tom Paris is an asshole.
So do you think all ships in Starfleet have collectible plates?
I like it. I hope so.
At least the
good ones.
And do they really call it Voy in real life? Do people really call it Voy?
There was a debate about this on the internet. Some people were saying, like, I don't call it Voy. And people were like, well, I do.
It does save time.
Well, I had a friend in middle school. He didn't like being called a Trekkie. He said that was insulting. He insisted on being called a Trekker.
That was a thing in the 90s. Yeah. Yeah. We were all there. That was, you know, early Usenet and disconnected independent BBSs.
The culture
led us in some strange directions.
Yeah.
As we are now living with the results of that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Now people like to be called Trekkors.
Trekkors.
Yeah, like sensors.
Oh, sensors. I get it. That's pretty funny.
I'm a Trekkor.
So you're talking about Starfleet collectible plates.
Flintstones,
chewable morphine.
The Enterprise D probably has.
The thing, yeah.
Plates.
And the thing to consider is the timeline. If this is 2381, which we believe it is, there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that it is.
When does Voyager make it back?
Voyager returns in 2378. So this is a mere 3 years later. So it makes sense for Tom Paris to be giving tours a la the fellow at the end of The Martian, who's like teaching classes about how not to freak out when your fucking world abandons you on another planet.
Oh, yeah. And you have to eat your own poop.
Even though he's like some kind of guy with a criminal record.
Well,
he's wanted.
And he can give a speech about how, like, I went to jail.
Yeah.
But look at me. All I had to do was do some miraculous shit. And now I'm no longer in jail. But he's also a lieutenant now, I think. But it's not like he's a captain yet, which makes sense.
He's been a lieutenant for a long time.
Well, was he the first that broke the transwarp barrier when he turned into...
That's the Salamander.
What happened to Chakotay? Did they throw Chakotay in the brig when he got back to Earth? Like,
you mean just for good measure? Because he's a Maquis.
Yeah.
B'Elanna
too. So
that'd be fine. That'd be fucked
up. Like, no, you guys
it'd be fucked up if they're like, oh, Tom Paris, the white guy.
Yeah.
So was it?
He can
welcome
go free.
Back, guys. You coming to jail?
The rest of you people, nah.
So was it Boimler when they were talking about Paris turning into Salamander? That was Boimler said.
Yeah.
Paris basically turned funky because of celerity induced acceleration. accelerated somatic mutation rate.
Yeah, because he broke the transwarp barrier and he okay. turned into a salamander.
Yeah, right. And it's just funny. I never had sex with
Captain Janeway and made salamander babies.
Yeah, I just never heard it worded like that. It was interesting. It was fun.
It was pretty hot.
It was fun.
It was a pretty hot way to word the techno babble.
Techno babble. Techno babble.
Techno babble.
And Mariner says, "Oh, did you get your plate signed by Chakotay or something?"
Oh yeah, did you get Chakotay? No, it's Pears.
Yeah.
Mekleth. She ran over Worf's Mekleth. I looked up Mekleth. It's one of their weird daggers.
Yeah, it's the smaller one.
It's the weird short sword dagger kind of thing.
Yeah, can I hold on?
He used it more in Deep Space Nine. You saw that more than the Batleth.
What's the one called that splits into... isn't there one that you press a button and it splits up?
That's a Star Trek thing.
Yeah, I just wonder what that's called. Klingon knives that split up.
Googling with Dan.
Googling with Dan.
Google on the podcast.
Not a Batleth.
No, it's not a Batleth.
No, that's another thing. It's badass.
Yeah, Klingon blade weapon. Well, that's just an auction. Never mind. Okay, well, it's not important. It doesn't matter it's what not it's important. Called.
All right, so one
nothing
thing...
nothing matters anymore.
The thing about Tom Paris is that they didn't do a Nick Locarno joke. And Nick Locarno, for those not in the know... was Robert Duncan McNeil's first role on Star Trek. It was on TNG in the first duty where he is on a team with Wesley and they do some aerial acrobatics that end up with one of their friends being killed.
And that girl that's in the actual episode that's called Lower
Decks. Ensign Sito, I forget her first or her family name. I forget. But Nick Locarno, at the end of that episode, he ends up getting in trouble, right? And my understanding, as the tale goes, though it could be apocryphal or otherwise incorrect, is that when they were putting together Voyager, they wanted to have the Nick Locarno character be brought back into the fold, and he would be what the character that became Tom Paris. And they really liked Robert Duncan McNeil. They wanted to bring him back. However, somewhere along the line, somebody realized, supposedly, again, as the story goes, that if they used the name Nick Locarno in the character, then they would have to pay continued royalties to the writer of that original episode. And so they opted to change the name and the character slightly, but
nobody wants to do that.
It's still Robert Duncan McNeil playing a fellow who's in jail, who has lots of honor and skills, but was put in jail for not necessarily a great reason, but like he's not like some evil piece of shit or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But basically.
So the point being, they didn't do a Nick Locarno joke. A lot of people were expecting they would do a Nick Locarno joke because it's an obvious joke that Nick Locarno looks exactly like Tom Paris.
Right, but
has a similar background.
You think they can't even reference it in Lower Decks?
I was thinking that maybe the same reason they had to change his name to Tom Paris is what either prevented or made it more problematic to even mention the character in this episode, because maybe they'd have to pay that person royalties. I don't know enough about the industry to A, know if this story is remotely true, but it's all over the internet.
It's all over it.
B, whether or not that means the studio's being assholes, or I don't know who's the asshole in this situation if someone's being an asshole. So you can write us in at feedback, and it's got Star Trek.
Maybe the characters maybe just never heard of this Nick Locarno,
or on Twitter,
you know,
at It's Got Star Trek. Tell us who the asshole is. Who's the asshole?
You know, we could look in the library and see if they have any good books on it, or maybe the microfiche has something related.
Is there
a punchline coming?
No, I was just making a suggestion.
You
just wanted to say microfiche.
And library, I like the idea of going to the library to look up like Star Trek, you know, fan.
What other types of fiches are there? Is it like
macrofiche?
Is macrofiche?
Yeah, shit will fucking blow your mind.
I want to pull out.
It's like going to the movie theater.
I want to pull out one of those big old.
It's a big old article.
I want to pull out one of those big old dusty books in the back of the library and open it up, and it talks all about like all the Star Trek lore and everything.
You just open
like
it
that.
Up to the Star Trek section.
I know, wouldn't
it
be
just,
cool?
It was just, and it's like ancient history. Do you want to hear some Klingon knot blades? Names?
Sure. Why not?
Odds and ends.
There's the Batleth.
Yeah.
There's the Duktag. There's the Gintok spear.
Of course, yes.
There's the Kleegot.
Mm-hmm.
The Kutluk.
Okay.
The Mekleth, which we were just talking about.
Just discussing that.
Mevok.
All right.
Kawat Malak.
And the Tajluku. The last one is the Tajluku.
I don't believe that
check
one.
Check it
that
is.
One I don't believe is real.
Well, it's real.
You're I think you made that one up.
No, I didn't. I'll to describe
is that
to you,
Memory Alpha or Memory.
This Memory Alpha
Bobo.
Baby. Now,
I'm sorry.
I don't. The thing is I didn't see any of the knives that split into three. So did I just make that up?
No, you didn't make that up. That exists, but and I'm pretty sure that's Star Trek and not something else. Like not other some sort of sci-fi.
Maybe they didn't give him a name.
I'm trying to find a picture
Trek
of the
Star Trek movie. Or
trying
something.
To find a picture of the Tajk, but I can't find a picture of the.
Maybe
Tajk-ka.
That's what the, maybe that's what the Tajk call is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the three. That means three part dagger in Klingon.
Three-part dagger.
Non-canon sources are calling it a Tajtik. It was never named on screen. In both cases, the script of the episodes feature Worf fighting with his Mekleth. It is unknown why Mekleths weren't used as such. Whatever. Mekleth. This is just a bunch of stuff, but we don't care. It's a knife with a particularly long blade that is used almost as though it were a sword. Ockrund explains that the word Tajtik is that.
Oh. That's more like a sword. Okay.
So it's like
it's not the three-part dagger.
Maybe it's that sword thing we were talking about. No, that was the Mekleth. Okay, that's enough of that. Are we fully entertained by
we're
what
gonna,
that
we're
said?
We're going to have to do a whole other episode about Klingon weapons.
Did we reach the max entertainment level of that section? Did we squeeze it a little too dry?
We've gotten everything we can get.
Yeah.
All right, so I did really enjoy this episode, but I did have two little critiques that caught me a little bit off guard.
How dare you?
No, it's okay.
I'm just kidding.
It's okay, because it didn't ruin the episode to me. Like, this is a top episode for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well put together. However, one thing I thought didn't land as well as the jokes usually land here was the whole thing with Shax not wanting to talk about sort of the traumatic experience with Rutherford. The joke was funny in construction, but the punchline didn't make that much sense to me, because while we have seen a lot of the whole Star Trek characters coming back from death, we haven't seen it in the context of like some horrible thing that they don't want to talk about necessarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah. No, I know what you mean. It's from the perspective of a Lower Decks, obviously. Yes. And it sort of makes you sort of wonder, like, us as the audience, we take for granted when stuff like happens in the show, but there's a crew of 1,000 people back there we never think about. And do they make an announcement over the loudspeaker? Yeah. What happened? Like, how would they announce that this person's back to life, you know? Or do they just kind of let it slide?
And that's hilarious.
You just see him at the replicator line.
The thing that makes it not,
Kiwi ketchup.
Not land
Kiwi
as well
ketchup,
for me is the fact that they introduce what's effectively a new concept of the officers don't want to talk about it or they're uncomfortable. And that brings up the second critique I have, which is, again, as funny as it is in terms of a joke in the context of the episode, and frankly, I'm okay with that, because in drama, you should focus more on what's going to work as opposed to what fits the canon of the universe. Except the result is that Cody guy... who asks the question, is Cody, right? Who asks the question and then effectively gets fired off of the Cerritos.
Right.
And maybe his career is ruined. Yeah. That's not a very Star Trek reaction to it, right? It's not a Starfleet reaction. And the shock of that, the joke relies on the fact that we know it's not a Starfleet thing to do when somebody asks what's a perfectly innocent and reasonable question. And then is fired and banished because of that. Yes, it's funny because you're like, whoa, it's so bad that even Starfleet people are going to be like,
you think
real
it was too, just a little too out of character, though.
It's because it didn't really connect well, because what the show has done previously, to its credit, is sometimes it'll make you think they're going to do something assholey, but then it turns out it's like, no, like with Rutherford getting to try different jobs and everyone's totally supportive of him, including Shax, when he thinks he's going to disappoint Shax because he decides that he does not want to be in security.
Yeah, even like he's doing the bridge training and he keeps like totally screwing it up.
Yeah,
and the Ransom's just like, yeah, just let's just keep trying it.
Yeah, let's just keep doing it. So normally that's what they do. And so that threw me a little bit off. And it's like, again, if you want to have a good dramatic beat or a comedic beat, depending on the style of the show, you should go for that as opposed to consistency. I do tend to agree, certainly in the Star Trek context, because you're never going to be able to be 100% consistent. So if you can tell a better story or have a better characterization by fudging a little bit the lines... There's a perfect example in this episode. Mariner not knowing Tendi's first name, Devana. We know she did know the name in a previous episode, but they didn't let that prevent... I'm sure they knew that too. And they just... It's not a mistake. They were just like, you know what? We want to make this point here, and we can make the point most clearly with Mariner not knowing Tendi's name. So we'll retcon it so she doesn't remember Tendi's name. That's an acceptable, and that's a good way to do it. in the case with the whole Black Mountain and all this other stuff and the terror and the trauma, along with the ruining the career of a very polite, nice young ensign by all accounts, I don't know that that joke was worth the price, if you know.
Yeah,
what I mean.
I did like the part though when he was talking about the death Black Mountain.
Me
and
too.
Stuff like
it's
that.
Funny. Said, it's yeah. hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, but they're framing it as this is the reason why they never talk about it to the lower to anybody, you know? So
yeah, I guess it is also kind of like a little bit out there because that's never sort of been, you're right, that's never been an issue.
And
sort of like
it's a tiny
show.
Little nitpick. It's not even it doesn't even rise fully to the level of a complaint. But it was something I noticed that was sort of scratched against me a little bit.
Well, speaking of scratching, I still am not buying why Dr. Kitty was like in the box, but it still had scratch marks on the post. Why would her ancestors be into the?
Well, maybe she's not so much into the. She was like, I don't care about that old scratching post.
No, I know, but why would, if she wasn't into the scratching post, why wouldn't her ancestors be into the scratching post?
Well, they were into it.
It's a fair point.
So why would they be into it and she wasn't? You know what I mean?
I think this is.
I think the joke is more should more be that all cats want to play in the box, and so they would be like, why aren't there any scratches? Yeah. It's because we don't use this.
The
I see what you're saying.
And I think here again we have another example of.
It was still a really funny joke, though.
Of they know it doesn't make sense in the end because. Why she could have had another box? Is there something special about that particular box? Why?
What
she,
was in the box?
Why is she keeping?
Why don't they have just?
What's in the box?
They got all those funky boxes in the cargo bay, probably. Like
so, the joke is not 100% structurally sound. It's built on a problematic foundation. But seeing a cat in a coat get into a box is still that's to me that again that's just like it's worth it. If that's what they had to do, if that's that was their resolution, sure, maybe there would have been other options that maybe would work a little bit better. Because I was also trying to think with the Shax thing, what would the other option be? Well, maybe you could just have it that Shax. It turns out it is one of those simple, you know, it's like, oh yeah, it was a transporter loop thing or whatever. Make it more simple. But then I'm not exactly sure where they're going with this Rutherford thing. Now that Rutherford has this information, I don't know. Is this a one-time thing where it's just like, or is it going to impact him somewhere down the line? We'll find out soon enough.
I mean, he got his cybernetics replaced, and that really only affected him for one episode so far.
Yeah, it still has. He still talks about memory loss, and he doesn't have a full memory of everything, but clearly has a memory of some things.
I like the Cation, just the idea of it's. They're this cute cat, but they're also this respected, you know, member of the crew, you know, this doctor. So when they act like a cat, it's kind of cute and funny. But at the same time, the crew's a little weirded out by it because it's like,
yes,
it's like combining two things in a weird way that makes you uncomfortable. And it's kind of awesome.
Yeah. It was the same way the crew on the Next Generation on the Enterprise D would in sick bay would be weirded out when Dr. Crusher just like let her son come in and use all the medical equipment.
Oh, yeah.
To run his experiments that often put the ship in danger.
Yeah.
The only other Cation that you see is on TAS.
Remember when
there's some in the movies in the background?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Even in Star Trek IV, I think you see.
Remember when Wesley first came in? He ran onto the bridge and sat in the captain's chair, and Picard was like beside himself.
Well, he was beside himself in Times Square.
Yes, he was because he was news there time travel.
and time clone.
He met himself. That's a paradox. If you time cop and you touch each other,
that's Back to the Future.
It's different in Time Cop. Whereas Back to the Future, if you just see them, it could cause a paradox.
It could.
In Time Cop, you have to touch the other person. They say if their atoms occupy the same space, it makes the things explode. First of all, is that really the atoms occupying the same space when
probably
you touch
not.
Someone? No. So anyway,
you can listen to we discuss that in more detail when we discussed Time Squared a few weeks back.
Yes.
Scroll down the list.
Just a little reminder teaser.
All right.
Jesse was mentioning the spicy kiwi ketchup. That was is that some kind of play on something?
That was funny.
Is that like there's banana ketchup?
I don't know, but like somebody made a comment that was weird, and maybe it's like he's into that since he's come back from the dead. He's into weird ketchup.
Oh yeah, maybe there's gonna be a thing where he's all like a little off.
Because like I think maybe
Mariner wasn't cool with it.
She was like, yeah, why would you why would you mess with ketchup?
Have you ever had banana ketchup?
No, I don't need any kind of ketchup.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you don't. That's right. You don't have ketchup. Banana ketchup's pretty interesting.
I mean, it sounds interesting, but I bet it's still ketchup.
The food choices they make are always interesting because Star Trek, you know, I've said before, always has I always like their dinners and their meals they have. They're always so funny. But
street corn. Poutine.
Well, okay. So, but in
nachos.
In, so in the Star Trek.
Bonsai.
Hold on. Star Trek, but Star Trek really never talks about what they eat from the replicators. They kind of get it, but they don't talk about it. What they really show off is these banquet tables of awesome food. Yeah. Here they talk about the replicator food and like all that stuff you listed, and then there's like tacos, and he ordered some pupusas. I don't know.
It's usually pupusas funky drinks.
Pupusas are delicious. It's just kind of like funny that they're putting all this, throwing all these different food items. They're just naming different foods, and it's kind of awesome. They never talk about that. They don't really talk about that in the other Star Trek. Except when Troy gets some chocolate sundae.
Yeah, periodically. Right, banana split or something.
Or the
Hasperat.
The something sunrise.
Hasperat.
What is that?
We had this discussion.
We had this discussion.
It turned out it was either a stew or like a baklava.
That's what it's right.
I think it's like a stew, but it could also be like a baklava. It sounds more like a baklava.
It's a Bajoran dish.
Like a Bajoran baklava, but it could be a Bajoran stew. It's probably a stew.
Maybe it's like a baklava that's stuffed stewy, with stew.
Or like a stewy baklava. Yeah, just like swimming in some Bajoran honey.
Like a pasty, but
it's a stew. Bajoran
pasty.
Yeah.
So when Mariner was talking about Ensign Escher.
Yeah.
And she was...
I thought there was going to be an Escher joke.
Yeah, no, it's a different joke.
But I couldn't determine an Escher joke conversation.
How do you do an Escher joke?
MC Escher.
How do you do a vocal joke with people talking about Escher? You'd have to do a visual joke. Mm-hmm.
But she was saying, she just got lucky and was in the right place with the right hypo spray. And we were just talking about this with Star Trek IV, how doctors don't actually do shit in the future.
They have their hypo sprays
and their medical tricorders and their little head doohickeys that they stick on that go
They have that operating thing that they put over their belly.
Oh yeah, that shit always does a trick.
You don't see much. You do see the operation when they're doing some trill.
Are you talking about when they're on the bed and there's the thing over, like over, the thing their over their crotch
and then
part.
And then there's like you imagine because you know it's old technology from the 1980s, you think it's like doing some auto surgery on them.
So
the doctors, it's true, they don't do shit.
I like that Shaq still referred to Rutherford as Baby Bear.
It
was cute.
Cute. We never found out why Boimler couldn't go through the doors, did we?
Because of security.
The implication was that he wasn't correctly added by Billups to the security system.
Bureaucratic issue.
Yeah, because at the end, because some people on the internet were saying, like, is it related to Boimler's transporter clone issue or something along those lines? But it did get resolved at the end, except for he was all messed up in the head from getting the shit kicked out of him and, smelling all that Jeffrey's tube gas.
Yeah.
And so they had that, what for me was another laugh out loud joke, which is I was embarrassed that I laughed out loud, but I did when he's all like, oh no, not again. He was trying to walk through the door and Tendi's like, no, that's just a wall with a seam in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just so out of nowhere.
And that guy Jet was like, I can carry you like through the door.
So I don't think they were making this joke, but you can totally buy that he was added in because he was saying they added me in the system, you know?
Yes.
And so you could totally just say it wasn't anything crazy. It's just this is a system admin thing where it's like somebody's in the system, but they don't have the right rights or the right roles or whatever.
Somebody didn't follow through all the way.
Someone didn't put all their permissions in correctly or something.
Yeah, they might have added him to the system without actually tagging him with whatever the appropriate he's allowed to be on the ship doing stuff.
It ain't the Enterprise.
He can't elevate himself to admin level.
Yeah, it's not the Enterprise.
People
on the Enterprise got that shit down. They don't fuck around with that shit.
Yeah.
The important people go on the Enterprise.
They should have done an episode of TNG where Data makes a data entry error and no pun intended. And as a result, it results in some comically simple little problem like this with maybe one particular crew member. But Data becomes so obsessed with it that he pulls like a Clues style thing where he like hacks into the computer and like erases logs and erases everyone's memory with some sort of like fluorazine gas because he doesn't want his error to be caught.
I think when people say no pun intended, they secretly intend.
No, in that case, it was not intended.
I'm thinking of a perverted joke.
I was
about
just being silly.
Perverted joke about Data and
with his being fully functional.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, there's been a data entry failure or something.
It's a good one
because he's impotent for some reason. I don't know.
But he's fully functional.
Yeah, he's totally functional whenever he wants to.
Well, you know, Dan knows.
But the thing about
when you're making a point about being like, oh, yeah, I'm fully functional, maybe not.
Oh, you think he's insecure?
Maybe he's compensating.
Maybe sometimes.
The thing is you have to want to make those decisions, and do computers really want
sometimes
to do anything?
Sometimes data's all tapped out.
Bad binars?
Yeah.
Bad binars?
What motivates a computer? What motivates a computer to make a decision, you know? Like, why would they up and do something?
What motivates a person?
He just wants to feel, man. Just wants to feel.
It's not quite the same.
It is. Philosophically, you can ask the exact same question about humans. We perceive that we have more answers about it, but that's only because we're human.
Of course, philosophically, you can say that, but philosophically, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
And that's what I'm doing. You're asking what motivates a computer. I'm asking what motivates a human.
Yeah, and
now it's a different question whether those motivations are similar.
Right, and I don't really think that, you know, I want to get into that big discussion.
We're not
right
getting
now.
Into that. That's not this kind of podcast.
No, exactly. So that's why.
That's not entertaining.
So, well, that's why I'm not answering that because, like, not because I can't do it. It's just because I don't want to.
You're fully functional. No, but bad binars, computers.
Bad binars. Yeah, she was talking about some bad binars.
She was listening to all the kind of folks she's into, which was, first, you know, she's into non-binary, bad binars.
Bad binars.
So as has been demonstrated before, Mariner has a broad array of interests.
Do you date two binars at once?
See, that's a question,
right?
Or are
they,
or are they
dating each other?
Yeah.
And do you got to horn in on
that? You're just like the.
Do you
got
to put on one of those little brain implant things in order to beep boop
with
them?
Beep boop them. You got to beep boop with them.
I don't know.
Because it's all ones and zeros with those people.
We got to learn more.
It's all ones and zeros with you people. How dare you?
Some good old fashioned binar prejudice.
I'm quantum.
It's like I like twos as well, mother.
What's wrong?
You get
with
out of this house. You get the fuck out of this house. No binar son of mine is going to be into twos or threes or none of that bullshit. None of that Federation bullshit.
Oh man,
you go to the Federation with that four and five.
You could do a lot with some like bad binar. Like that's how you get a bad binar.
Yeah.
toss them out of the house because they're just into like 0.5. Every now and then.
Oh man.
Or they put on some fucking LPs because they're all like, it sounds better in analog. the father takes off his belt and just starts beating
Get
the fuck
shit
out of him.
Here.
Just beating the fuck out of him. You take that back. Digital.
This is a digital house.
I don't want you hanging out down at Quark's anymore. You're hanging out with the wrong crowd with that fucking Vic Fontaine piece of shit singing at you in all analog.
All right.
But he's ultimately digital, so he passes. But he's an imitator. He's an analog poser.
That's some fucking poetry. He just laid down. All right. So, odds and ends. Visional odds and ends.
So
evens and beginnings.
What was, there was like, Tendi was talking to...
Tendi always makes me think of chicken tenders.
Yeah, I know, me too. Cause,
not in a sexual way.
No, but it's just because the people...
I'm a hungry...
People start calling them tendies at some point.
I've never called them tendies, but when somebody else is like, oh, I want some chicken tendies, I'm like, yeah, I'm right there with you.
I don't speak
so
that.
So she was, they were talking about getting her cat's thing, and she was like all cleaning something, and she's like... Why is there bile on the arches that... why is there bile on... Like, she's scrubbing some bile, right?
Where is that?
It's, she's like...
I'm not recalling.
I've really explained this really, really fucking...
Is it earlier
excellently.
In the episode?
Okay. Yeah, it's early. It says... Yeah, so Dr. Cat says, Ensign, get in here. And then Tendi goes, I scrubbed half the arches and I won't stop until all the bile is. And she's like, shut up. Listen.
All right, so she was doing something else.
So she was cleaning something. She was cleaning bile off the arches.
But it could have been a
sick bay.
Arches. It could have been a construction arch in terms of like a part of the,
right.
the ship, or it could have been the arches in an organ or a mouth.
Arches. Okay, I'm not arguing what the arch is. It can be whatever. But why was there bile all over something?
Why?
It's a medical.
What motivates bile?
I think Jesse probably answered the question appropriately.
I mean, she's a doctor. she's a doctor.
It's just you don't usually talk about scrubbing bile off things.
That's true.
You're hanging out with the wrong doctor.
There's not a lot of fluids flying around in the 24th century.
Yeah, and in general, like, there's not bile on the hospital walls too often.
Yeah, even when the panels explode and people die, there's not a lot of blood either.
Maybe it's, they got one of them...
They got some burns
One of them Linus lizard
burns.
Lizard saurian crew members, and maybe they squirt bile out their eyeballs or something periodically.
Oh, yeah.
You never know.
That guy that's always the guy in Discovery is always sneezing on people.
Oh yeah, that guy. They didn't. They should have thrown a character like. Well, no, they shouldn't have. I think it was just meant to be ambiguous and fun. Yes. But you know, it was like whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like ambiguous and fun.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Boimler mentions Fairhaven and Captain Proton. Talking about Tom Paris's various holographic adventures.
I believe we did a show on that.
Yeah, we did Fairhaven and Spirit Folk in episode 79. That was just Jesse and I. Because
we went
Dan,
to, we
Dan
went to
was
Ireland.
On duty.
I was on duty.
Jesse and I went to...
So smelly because I was on duty.
Jesse and I took a trip to Ireland and drank a lot of Irish whiskey and did a podcast from an Irish pub.
Your namesake.
Yes. Yeah, sort of.
We found a nice place to do a podcast from the...
Were you like...
British
on some,
Isles.
Were you on some green
Irish, the Irish
green
Isles.
Place?
Yeah, it was green was everywhere.
It was green. Did you see Luke Skywalker?
No, we didn't go to the weird rocky islands.
Okay. So when Freeman is all riffing with Paris, she goes like, "Just don't send us to the Delta Quadrant." like she was so proud of that joke, and everyone's like, "Ho ho ho!" And you know, Paris hears that shit all the time.
Yeah, exactly. No. I was thinking that too. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't have like a reaction shot of him being like, "Ugh." Not that again.
Yeah, really.
When the shuttle is landing on Quaalor 2, very briefly. This got called out by a couple people on the internet. It's hard to see. You had to kind of go frame by frame, but there is in the background, it looks like the Winnebago from Spaceballs, that Lone Star and Mog drive, because it's got the wings kind of like high up on it. Mm. It's not exactly like it, so I don't know if it's meant to be a reference or joke, but it's just always fun to think about Spaceballs. Any reason you have to think about Spaceballs, that's a good reason.
Yeah. I was watching a video. There's this channel that where this guy like makes all these 3D models of different sized things.
Oh, yeah. That's tight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one of them was like sci-fi ships.
Yeah.
And they included Spaceball 1. Spaceball 1 was like a mile long or something.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
All right.
I was, when Shax was talking all the death thing stuff was happening, he was talking about, I meant to mention, he was talking about scientific depravity.
Yes.
Like, I was like, what could that possibly mean?
And again, that was, it was funny, but it didn't quite match up with what we know. And, he didn't even, we don't know exactly what happened to him.
And he didn't talk about anything scientific. He talked about like some mythological shit.
I think what's difficult is, it's always difficult when you try to pull the joke of, we're not going to reveal this information to the audience because there's no way what we have could really match what's in their imagination, right? And I respect that. That's fine. It's just it so often doesn't quite work as well as they want it to. Mm. And I think here's an example of that. Is like I'm trying to imagine things that would make Rutherford go into the fetal position and sweat.
But on the other hand, I guess the whole point was just to say some ridiculous, conflicting, weird
shit. Of course. That's the point. That's the joke.
Because part of the joke of Star Trek is like, you know, you have creatures like Q, who are these omnipotent beings, and you're basically taking the idea of God and making it sort of making it seem realistic.
You know? And all of that's fine. It was like there's something like a little disconnect there between what we've actually seen. But who cares?
Who cares?
It's just a television program.
It's just
all in the caves.
It's not gonna ruin your day.
Just leave it in the caves of Nomad.
Yeah, that Klingon cave where all sorts of dishonorable or honorable shit. I can't remember.
They like to sing about caves.
They always singing about them caves, putting their blood wine in crates in caves.
That squid thing in the opening that hangs onto the nacelles is in the opening scene. There's a big squid monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of Reapers from the game Mass Effect.
Mm.
I've mentioned Mass Effect many times.
Yes, you have.
It's probably a commonly shaped creature. It's probably some kind of we were just talking about him, you know, a color out of
Garmagander.
You know, Cthulhu dude.
What's Cthulhu?
Like a Cthulhu dude.
What's that dude's name?
Cthulhu? Lovecraft.
No, Lovecraft. It's like a Lovecraft thing,
I guess. H.P. Lovecraft.
Cthulhu dude.
Yeah. See, I told you my memory
Who's
sucks.
That Cthulhu dude? Yeah.
Cthulhu dude.
You're going to Cthulhu you
That's
too?
A cool, I think we should just call him Cthulhu dude.
Cthulhu.
More odds and ends.
Cthulhu too.
I don't think so. I think that's it.
Cthulhu. You got any more odds and ends?
Cthulhu too.
Dan, any more odds and ends? I think
Cthulhu
I'm fresh.
Cthulhu too.
Fresh out of odds
Cthulhu
and ends.
Cthulhu
too. Billups is not Stevens. Stevens is not Billups. But
yes.
Stevens has
they're
a mustache.
They're easy to confuse, but they're different.
They both have mustaches, but one's bald.
And one is Paul Scheer. That's Billups. Mm-hmm. And he did a couple of the other voices, I think, in this episode. And then Stevens is a person that I don't recall. So that's good. There's a good amount of odds and ends for this episode. A fun episode. Entertaining. We get to learn more about Mariner and Tendi. That was cool. Rutherford. I enjoy this whole Rutherford kind of often having near nervous breakdowns.
Yeah.
Before.
I have to
this
know.
Case, this episode is not resolved. Usually it's resolved by the end, but in this one, not 100% resolved because he's sort of sweating and in the fetal position at the end of the episode. But we'll see if that goes anywhere further.
So sweating and in the fetal position.
And of course, Boimler getting to meet one of his heroes, Tom Paris. Hopefully he got his plate signed.
He was all strutting around at one point with that plate. He was all strutting. He was really like, I got my plate. And then he ran into the door.
Exactly. That was great. Yeah. So next week, we will talk about the next episode.
Episode
wait for the next. What's that song that goes in the next episode?
That's
Dr.
Just
Dre.
Chill.
Isn't that Dre?
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be doing.
It was 2000 something.
We don't know the name of the episode.
Let it ride. Let me ride.
Because they don't release the names of the episode in enough time for us to tell you. Because we get right to recording these podcasts. We watch these episodes. We get right to recording the podcasts so we can get the entertaining content out to you. ASAP.
Chronic 2000.
But you will know the name of the episode between now and next week, and you can bet your bottom dollar that we will know the name of the episode by the time we're recording.
And we will mention it on the podcast.
But it is episode 4, so that's what we'll be talking about. In the meantime, if you'd like to get into contact with us.
In the meantime.
I know, it's so hard not to do that. If you do want to get in contact with us, of course, the traditional old school email is available. It's feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Don't send us letters, though, because that's creepy.
People do. Yeah, well, you can send us letters.
Why
you can find
Why
our.
Can't
yeah,
they,
I'm just, well, because I'm we just
haven't
being
given,
silly.
It's creepy because we haven't given out our mailing address.
Yeah,
so if they
that's
find
why.
It, that's creepy. But email's fine. However, you're going to have more luck and more fun.
More luck.
If you follow
more luck.
And interact with us on Twitter, @itsgotstartrek on Twitter. We're also on Instagram. We're on Facebook. An increasing number of you are digging
Apple Podcasts,
the YouTube channel.
gotta say Apple Podcasts.
That really YouTube is pretty cool too,
We don't really do any. I mean, if you want to see a video of three dudes hanging around talking, that's our YouTube's not it.
No.
Our YouTube specializes in just having the podcast and highlights from the podcast with a static image. Now, it's a real nice static image.
It's a good one.
It's like you're listening to music.
It's an award-winning static image. Yeah. But, you know, if you want to listen to podcasts or your TV or something, YouTube is one great way to do it.
Spotify.
But yes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iTunes.
I'll Spotify
Overcast.
You.
I mean, Stitcher, all the business. You can find us there. Tell your friends.
Skitcher.
Your friends. It's Twitcher. One of those things that people don't think about because you don't want to be rude. You don't want to be horning in on your friend's personal business by recommending podcasts to them, right?
That was the second time you said horning in.
Yes. So you don't want to horn in on your, that's the third time, friend's business. By recommending podcasts to them. But what you don't realize is that your friend is out there, probably many of your friends, and they're like, oh man, I run through all my podcasts. I don't know what to listen to while mowing the lawn.
What am I going
to
do?
I've got to drive to the store and buy stuff.
I don't have headphones. I'm trying to listen through my phone speaker while I'm mowing the lawn.
What
could
I listen to in the car? I don't like music.
You could help them out by recommending our podcast. You could also recommend other podcasts. We don't recommend that you recommend other podcasts, but you are free to do so. But you can recommend our podcast and fill some time in their day, help them, distract them from their
I'm Rico,
their
I'm Phil.
Chores. Is that a joke?
Nope.
All right.
I was just making
doesn't sound like one.
I was just making a connection.
This is the type of
a connection between Rico
and
Phil.
Don't you start with your connections.
Because you said Phil, then I said Phil, and you said Recon something, and I said Rico. You said Reckon reconcile or something? You said it's coming out of R word.
All right. So this is the type of content that you could just play this part for your friend and say, like, hey, you want to listen to more of this?
Want to hear some really smart stuff?
Would you like to hear this?
You want to listen to some more of this poor bullshit?
There was that person, catchphrase. The person that said we had really good chemistry. Because we've known each other a long time, so we just, it sounds like.
We carefully script each of these episodes and rehearse all week long.
The trick to rehearsing is you have to make it sound like it's not rehearsed. Exactly. So that's how you got to rehearse even more.
That's the trick.
That's in this episode, I practiced talking over everybody. That's what I did this whole episode, was just talk over everybody.
I don't think so.
It was pretty obnoxious of me. So,
I don't think you talked.
It's the coffee.
No, I don't think you talked over me.
Well, I didn't do it like the whole time, but I did it a couple times.
I think we all at some point talk over someone else.
I know it's hard to get a word.
But it's
in,
good
man.
To it's good to speak up.
The main thing Everybody's is that I never talk over anybody else.
Oh, Patrick, you silly boy! But, you made a joke.
We have to say goodbye. So
we do.
That was mental comedy.
There's no more podcast.
Fucking mental is the right word for it.
Silly humor.
Silly humor. I call it silly humor. Episode 4. Next week, more of this engaging content coming your way for free, funded by Big Star Trek, so you don't have to pay a dime or hear an ad.
It'll have more Star Trek next time.
There will be
more Star Trek.
Extra Star Trek, because episode 4 is going to be shoved right deeply in there. So we
shove it right up your
forward to talking to you next
week. It'll be a star pilgrimage.
In the meantime, have a good one, and we will talk to you in the future.
Future.
Goodbye.
Damage report?
None.
That was weird.